Welcome to the Retail Exchange Podcast.
Digital signage has become an indispensable tool for retailers. It can help to engage customers, drive sales, and generate additional revenue streams. But harnessing its full potential comes with its own set of challenges. On this episode, we'll delve into the strategies and technologies required to conquer these hurdles, captivate shoppers, boost engagement, and unlock greater return from investment. Hello, I'm Carl McKeever, and welcome to the Retail Exchange Podcast. Today, we have a very special episode for you. Recently, we sat down with retail leaders from Fortnum & Mason and the John Lewis Partnership as part of a live episode recording presented by Trust Systems at the wonderful Samsung KX venue in London. On this episode, I'm talking to Tom Langley, Head of Personalization and Retail Media at the John Lewis Partnership, and Sophie Cunningham, Head of Digital Transformation at Fortnum & Mason. Two experienced leaders from two of retail's biggest names with valuable insights to share. Together, we discuss the strategies and essential techniques for maximizing the impact of digital signage, digital content, and retail media. If you're a seasoned retail leader that has responsibility for or an interest in digital signage, you'll want to stay tuned for the next 40 minutes or so. But before we dive into the conversation, I have a small request. If you're excited to hear this episode and enjoy the podcast, please take a moment to follow the podcast and leave a rating on your app. Our guests can see which podcasts have a big audience, so your support helps us to attract more of retail's biggest names onto the show. Now, let's get into it. Here's the episode. Good morning and hello everyone, and welcome to this very special live recording of the Retail Exchange Podcast. I'm joined today by Sophie Cunningham, Head of Digital Transformation at Fortnum & Mason. Welcome. Tom Langley, who is Head of Personalization and Retail Media at John Lewis Partnership. And also with Mike Dowson of Trust at the end of the session. I've got some very special questions for him and what they do. So I'm going to get straight into it. Could you first of all just give us a brief overview of your role, Sophie? What do you do and what are you responsible for?
I won't spend a huge amount of time introducing Fortnum & Mason, but it's a historic British retailer with 317 years old this year. And we've pretty much for all of that history been based out the same flagship Piccadilly store. We do also have an international business, so we sell wholesale and direct to consumer online. We've got a store and a restaurant in Hong Kong and a few restaurants in London as well. I look after digital transformation there, which is a nice fluffy term. It's difficult to describe what digital transformation is, but I would say it's more about transformation, which tends to have a very heavy kind of data systems and technology element to it. And that will be all of our back-end systems, as well as then our kind of front-end and our engagement with customers in-store and online.
And Tom, how about you?
So the John Lewis Partnership is a partnership, so it's a partner-owned organisation. And the partnership owns the two brands of Waitrose and John Lewis, which hopefully everyone's familiar with. My role is the Head of Retail Media and Personalisation, and I guess in some ways they're quite separate things in how retailers think about them. So retail media, I guess primarily people think of how do you create monetization streams from your data and your assets, whereas personalization in terms of how do you actually kind of improve the customer experience. But actually in a former life working with Dunnhumby and Tesco, we kind of found that retail media was an incredible kind of profit driver, but kind of somewhat dumb in how it was kind of putting assets in front of customers, whereas personalization was very expensive actually for the retailer, but wasn't obviously profitable. So actually what we found is the key thing is to bring those two things together and ensure that at what you're doing with suppliers and how you're thinking about retail media, you should also think about how does that come to life for customers and improve the customer experience. So it might seem somewhat unnatural for some kind of organizations, but for us, it's really important to think about how we improve the customer experience and then how do we also create supplier opportunities within that.
So I guess the first question is, what would you say is in your separate views, what is digital's role in customer experience? You know, it's fast evolving, but where would you put a marker in the sand now?
So I would say that our digital strategy is quite clear that technology is there to enhance the customer experience. And a few ways that it kind of does that, I think it makes the journey in store really, really seamless so that customers can focus on kind of the emotion and the journey of shopping rather than on the mechanics. I think it enhances the products that we can bring to customers. So things like personalized products themselves. Digital technology opens up a lot of avenues for new and exciting things that you can do with those products. And I think it also allows us to reach more people than ever before and bring what used to be sort of one single store in London out to that international market and allow people, no matter where they are, to engage with that brand and also to consume our products and get those fulfilled in a way that's really convenient for them.
Yeah, I agree with everything Sophie's saying. I think, say, the kind of build, I suppose, for us in how do we think about digital, I almost try not to think about digital too much, but think about customer needs and ground yourself in what are you solving for the customer? So how am I making shopping easier and faster, getting better value, better service, and inspiring and engaging? So almost ground yourself in what are you trying to solve for the customer, and then how can digital really help you kind of evolve that journey? You know, I think of the organizations outside of retail are really setting the tone for what customer expectations are. So whether it's, you know, how you search on Google and what you expect to return from your search through to Netflix recommendations, really customers' expectations are now heightened. And as retailers, we have to now kind of catch up and work kind of towards those expectations customers expect for, you know, if you think about e-commerce and the expectation to get the delivery that day or the next day, you know, and as a retailer, you have to very quickly, fast-paced, use some of the digital technology out there to keep up with customer demand.
In many ways, both of those answers are, I suppose, summarising more from almost a customer benefit side of it, more engagement, more experiential, more fun during the experience. But surely, too, there's also another side of it, which is about the commercial optimisation for the company and for the brands.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's right. I think it offers you so much opportunity to do things more efficiently when you use, you know, whether it's, I kind of put data and digital in the same kind of sentence, really. But I think, you know, I think it, just the simple thing of digital signage outside a store and what it offers you in terms of not having the kind of massive staff you need to go in and, re-put in the kind of the old print signage that we used to have. You can centrally control digital signage, things like that. So it's just much more efficient. You need much less staff. But you need to be careful that I still think a lot of creative can look and feel better when it's physical. So how do you make sure that digital signage isn't just about efficiency and automation, but it's still about improving that customer experience and making it more engaging?
I'm sure you've both experienced the same as I have, the frustration perhaps of following people in the street which are, you know, head down into their screens, they're in a different conversation somewhere else and you just wanting to get by. Take that concept and bring it in store. How easy or difficult is it to get the customer engaged in what you're trying to get them to do versus what's already happening on their phones or their tablets? Surely it's pretty hard to actually get people's attention now, isn't it?
So I really don't have any problem with customers walking around the store on their phones. Actually, I love that people are, you know, they have the ability to have that technology on them and engage with digital content while still being in a physical store. But I do think we need to differentiate between the customer who is online to shop and the platforms that they would use to shop and a customer that is there to research. And really, that's what you see in store. It's a customer who sees a product on the shelf and they're wanting to learn more. It's that kind of research journey. I want to know more about specific ingredients or allergens within a product. I want to know about the story, how it's produced. I want to see if there's anything else that I can look around for and inspire me. And I think brands have a bit of a challenge if they've built up their online presence to be very e-com focused and not really around that customer research journey. So I think differentiating those two is quite difficult, but really key to making that engagement in-store online work.
And you touch on an important point there as to the role that digital services play in providing service versus those traditional interactions you might have got with a colleague in-store. How do you see that? Is one complementary to the other? Is one a replacement for?
So I think different customers have different preferences, right? Some people don't want to interact with a colleague. Typically, when people come to a Fortnum store, that's one of the things they love. And I think technology for us can be a massive enabler for giving those colleagues the maximum amount of face time with the customer and really allowing them to provide that exceptional service. So there's the online technology for the customer, but also you drive a lot of that customer experience through the technology that your staff are using.
And Tom, I guess in the same scenarios, you'll probably find people are switching that kind of dynamic quite frequently as well, where they might have a physical question to a store partner, and then they want to get immersive themselves and dig a little bit deeper into some aspects.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to understand that customers are completely expecting seamless experiences. So And I think it's useful to constantly ground yourself in data. So nowadays in stores, you'll be monitoring footfall and customers coming into store and then monitoring your basket. So, you know, typically in a big department store for us, we see a less than 30% conversion. So customers are using the physical store to still come and research, understand, browse, think, consider. And then online, again, it's, you know, less than 50% of visits are converting. So what are customers there to do? And that's what we spend our time researching, right? Customers are there, they're trying to research about products. You know, and to Sophie's point, people are walking around the store often actually just, you know, it's not necessarily they're sitting there looking at prices of your competitors. They're quite often just looking for more information about the products. So you have to really embrace, you're not going to get away from customers are going to be staring at their phones. So how do you provide immersive content in that whilst also considering your store as a theater? And that's the challenge in both of our brands are kind of premium brands. And, you know, we do a lot of things with sampling in the Waitrose store for food, because what's the best way to get customers to try new food? It's to put it in their mouths, right, and try it and enjoy it. And then, you know, in our John Lewis stores, how we reinvent space. So we've got our rooftop kind of bar on top of Oxford Street, and really thinking about how you make your stores an engaging experience space, not just a place to come and functionally shop.
And I think you rightly allude there to the fact that the use of digital has gone way beyond primary signage and wayfinding needs and is now being actively integrated as part of the architectural landscape of departments and, in fact, a whole brand.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, digital signage has gone on a bit of a journey. I think of, you know, typically, I think the starting place was to have the digital signage outside the front of the store and think about it as retail media more. So it's about an income stream. But actually, you know, as we've learned through that, it's, you know, you can create much more engaging content. It's much more efficient. And actually, then you can create reusable assets and things like that. So it's kind of, there's many reasons to use digital signage around the stores. But I think there's many mistakes you can make as well of just taking what you would have done on physical print and doing it in digital signage. You know, that makes for fairly boring signage, right? I think what you have to do is go, right, this is now a new medium where I can make much more engaging, interactive, creative to really kind of draw customers in and inspire them.
And I guess one of the things that all brands will be trying to get right is that balance of what is the brand voice and which brand is speaking loudest. I guess in somewhere like John Lewis, which famously had a very democratic kind of almost brand base where no one brand was elevated over any other, that's a tightrope you must walk quite tightly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what we talk to suppliers about is how do we grow together and how do we bring the best of both of our brands? Because often a supplier will just want to, you know, really splash their brand at the front of, you know, our store. But, they, you know, we have to remember we're trying to ensure we build and retain our brand heritage that the British customers love. And how do we use our brand as the kind of frame, you know, and then bring the other brands to life? And I think particularly in grocery, where the Waitrose brand will help you elevate your brand position and actually the aspirational side of your brand to be part of Waitrose. Customers don't come to Waitrose for a kind of long tail of range. They come for a carefully curated range. They trust our buyers to have carefully selected the brands. And so we have to really protect our brand with how the suppliers show up as well inside that, whilst allowing the brands to express all of the work they've put into in you know, creating new brands.
And Sophie, where do retailers get it wrong, I guess? Because look, when there is such a rich seam of content which is available, brands are keen to raid their archives to tell as many stories as possible. You know, surely it gets to the point where you could, you know, be overambitious and try and overlay or over-communicate and over-complicate something which actually needs to be pretty simple.
It's a pretty good question. So I think when you're building up digital content, to do it well, you have to put a lot of time into it. And that's in kind of not just creating the content, but then also how you store it, how you label it, how you maintain it over time and update it. So I think there's a real distinction to be made between content that you produce and use, and that's great, it worked, and then you'll get rid of it, versus stuff that you will keep around and making sure that you invest in the things that you keep around. You do treat that as an asset, as a business, and you look after it. I think if you make that distinction, you can afford to spend that bit more time and then you've got fewer assets but higher quality ones.
And Tom, I suppose there's also a fine line between how you use digital media, whether it's about storytelling and brand journeys or whether it's about offers and promotions. Is there evidence that perhaps even within Waitrose and John Lewis that, you know, one works better for each of the brands than the other?
Yeah, for sure. I think you've got to consider each of your categories and think about what the customer journey is in terms of consideration through to purchase. You know, and if you think about grocery, typically 60 to 80% of your basket as a customer is the same week on week. So what's the most important thing to solve for customers to free up their time is to help them find the things they buy regularly really quickly and add them to their basket, because that then frees up time for them to spend time on inspiration, on search and things like that. So, you know, grocery is a lot about getting your listing recommendations right, whereas in non-grocery, that consideration journey is very different in terms of if I'm buying a telly, it's very hard to predict that before I search for televisions. So what you have to do in a non-food environment and a low purchase cycle is be very responsive to in the moment, you know, so that you can then try and convert, take someone to the right content where they're researching through to purchase. So I think we have to think about those category dynamics differently across Waitrose and a department store like
that. So relevance to the moment, to the area, to the customer need, and trying to be as focused as you can.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a common mistake that retailers will make is they'll buy an enterprise piece of technology in the hope that it will solve all of their different channels. And, you know, the reality is there's no silver bullets. So you have to be really careful to not be sold the dream that there's an enterprise piece of kit that's going to help you do all that. So you also need brilliant planners, like brilliant people who can work with each of the channel technologies. So there is no CRM solution who also does digital recommendations brilliantly. So you've got to be, you know, really considerate about being willing to work with each of the channels individually in terms of perfect execution for customers.
And I imagine one of the challenges there is actually bringing the different suppliers together who will cooperate and work together.
Absolutely. And I think being clear with your tech providers of how you want to work and how you want to plan across all of those different channels. And there are different ways you can execute. Personalization in some ways. So if you think about, I'm going to send you a coupon, I can do that, you know, exactly at an individual level. I can send Sophie, Tom and Carl an individual set of offers. But at a store in a digital signage, I can't provide an individual customer a product. I have to target it to the store. So personalization exists at the point of execution, really, in terms of what level you can do the targeting. And so you need to explain that to all your tech providers to ensure you set up in the right way.
And each of these tech providers surely is the gatekeeper of their own technology. So there must be situations where people are somewhat reluctant to almost want to, you know, partner up and open up that knowledge, let's say, which is clearly of their, you know, intellectual value of their own.
Yeah, exactly. And so what's, as a channel technology provider, what are you trying to do? You're trying to win more retailers and you're trying to improve the efficiency of the end-to-end flow of that channel. But that's ultimately what you're going to be focused on. So as a retailer, you have to know that and don't try and break that. So you have to figure out how you're going to work with the point where you plan and you book into that channel and not try and break the actual workflow of the tech provider, because you want to use the global products from that tech provider, because that's where they're going to be innovating. If you have some kind of version that is been kind of, you know, crafted for your organization, you're ultimately in 5-10 years time going to have some sort of out of date piece of kit.
So you need partners which are engaged and cooperative.
Yeah, exactly.
Sophie, a different challenge I'm sure for you is the whole thing of how do you digitize tradition. Fortnum and Mason been around for centuries, you know, iconic flagship in Piccadilly. How on earth do you go about thinking about bringing those kind of stories into the modern age?
Yeah, so it's definitely a challenge for us. And I'd say that challenge is both physical, because we actually have a centuries old store and some of the furniture that we've got is decades old. So we have to be very careful about how technology fits around that.
So you can't just pull down ceilings and put in new Wi-Fi cabling and...
I think our CEO would have something to say about that.
Right,
sure.
Okay.
But
I've touched a nerve there, haven't I?
We are allowed to put new wiring in, but we do have to be very careful about exactly how that's done.
All respect to the supplies to work.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got the physical challenges, but then I think you've also got the kind of cultural fit challenges, and it's how the technology kind of sits sympathetically with those heritage products and those heritage kind of brands and the look and feel of the store and how that is kind of consistent. You can bring the online technology into the store. But I do think also digitizing tradition is, you know, it's a massive opportunity for us as much as it is a challenge, because we're very lucky. We have, you know, this fantastic brand, this fantastic heritage, and people are actively looking to engage with that content. So digital, we definitely see it as an asset rather than a challenge, even though the actual implementation can be problematic at times.
And I guess one of the other challenges must be, surely, you know, for a business which has been around for so long and has done so well over so many years, is convincing other people within the leadership team about why this is important.
That's a really interesting point, because it was one of the things that I was concerned about when I joined Fortnum's, but it's not at all the case. I would say actually technology is very trendy, and in a lot of ways it's not very hard to sell to senior leadership. I think in terms of the output of what that technology gets you, people are really keen for it. But what is more challenging is explaining the work that needs to go in on the ground level to make it possible. So all of that kind of good data cleansing, data structuring, the architecture, the integrations piece, trying to make those quite complex and technical concepts simple to leadership and therefore get the investment at all stages of the project life cycle, I think is challenging.
So essentially, it's about getting people to think that it's not just about making a 10-second TikTok video.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in the nicest possible way, there are some fantastic suppliers out there, but you will find that senior people within a business receive a lot of sales pitches. And I think it's kind of setting a optimistic but realistic, you know, this is what we can achieve and this is what it will get you, but it's not a magic bullet. It still needs all the good traditional business processes underlying it to get that value for the customer and the brand, alongside all the nice promises that of where you'll get to and keeping that vision going with the groundwork to make it possible.
And Tom, I can imagine a different but similar challenge for you would be the partnership structure, in as much that you have many stakeholders. Perhaps there's the overarching partnership ethos and values, and then there's the individual brands, and then whichever of the products and services that you're trying to promote.
Yeah, exactly. And it has been a journey, I would say, the last couple of years on, you know, I guess how the partnership thinks of itself in terms of how it's going to make money in the future. I think, this is not just a partnership piece. This is a retailer, you know, globally of, you know, around the globe in retail, profit is a challenge. You know, in terms of buying and selling product and making money from that, it's become more and more challenging as marketplaces expand and they take more of the sales, they make it more convenient. It makes it harder for traditional retailers to make money. And I think, you know, the industry does a good job on the press, but you essentially need to rethink the whole operating model of retail and how you make money. And that's where really retail media or its data services and starting to make money outside of buying and selling products to customers, because then that frees you up to have money to invest into providing brilliant customer experiences. And, you know, I guess Amazon have kind of famously created the kind of advertising services and the billions they make in that money, but that then provides them the ability to keep prices really low for customers. And I think it's educating traditional retail leadership that you have to really think the fundamentals of how you're going to make money as a retailer.
And is that just essentially in simple terms about monetizing the content?
Not just content. I think you have to think about every asset you have as a retailer. So you have data assets. So we have a loyalty card, which collects a lot of data. So if you are a brand in Waitrose, typically you don't sell direct to customer. So you actually don't have a direct relationship with the customer to understand their behavior. And so as a retailer, I can tell you that, you know, someone was previously buying Fairy, you know, and over the last 6 months they've lapsed and they've gone to buy Finish. As a brand, you can't see that. So loyalty card data really helps you unlock that insight to help brands understand their customers. And then the assets then are how do you then execute that? So as a retailer, you've got assets, you know, through your CRM programs, through your stores. We have publications that are still really popular with our customers, through to then digital assets. So yeah, it's really thinking about your assets from understanding to activating customers and how valuable they are for the brands that we work with.
And it seems we're in a changing environment where perhaps we've gone from almost that passive but known data collection that customers would have been aware of, now to much more almost direct baiting of the customer. You know, Tesco's Challenges initiative, which has just launched, you know, buy 10 products and we'll tempt you with another 100 club card vouchers as a result of that. It's a much more almost aggressive stance on using loyalty and personalization to sort of say, well, we won't just kind of, you know, tempt you with a little bit of money off. We are directly incentivized you to buy these things for a reward.
Yeah, it's incredible to watch in the last 3 years, kind of the tone was set by Tesco really of flipping from it being about personalised offers and things that are a bit under the radar to in your face, club card prices. If you want this price, you need to swipe your card. So what that gives is Tesco go from kind of 60-ish, 70% swipe rates to kind of 90-95%, because why wouldn't you? You're suddenly saving £5 in the shopping basket. So I think loyalty and the mechanics are much more in your face.
And is some of that because the customer is happy now? That there's almost, it's much more complicit in terms of the way that this is operating?
Yeah, complicit or sort of kind of numb to it a little bit now, maybe. But I think that you still need to be really considerate of your value exchange that you provide. So if you do this action, you provide me your data, I'm going to provide you a better experience. And that's what we're constantly careful of is there has to be the right value exchange for a customer. I think digital is a great one of why am I going to log in? I'm not necessarily going to check out, but why am I going to identify myself? And I think in exchange, you have to provide personalized recommendations. You know, previously you bought this, this goes really nicely with this. You know, I think you have to be really careful of, you know, what are you doing in exchange to get the data from a customer so that they will log in, so that they will swipe their card so you can collect that data.
Certainly the customer seems to be more willing to participate.
I think that's right. I think that, you know, you see much less than when kind of the GDPR kind of movement happened. I don't know if it's, you know, 5-10 years ago, and it was kind of in the press and everyone was talking about data privacy. I think that's kind of dropped off in terms of the industry conversation. I think customers are more kind of agnostic to it now.
Yeah, and I think the whole kind of scandal around Facebook and data mining and data selling and all the rest of it didn't help.
Well, and if anything, Google and Facebook are the ones that have benefited most from that, because now if you want to buy media in both of those platforms, you can't use your data. It's very much a walled garden of you have to essentially use their services more and more. So actually the people that have benefited most have been the people who caused the problems, right? It's an interesting one.
Switching focus a little, I guess, to kind of almost store experience, Sophie. There's increasing use of digital media, whether that's for wayfinding, storytelling, offers and promotions. We see it everywhere. In fact, just this week, JD Sports opened their largest ever store in Stratford. You've probably seen it. Mm. And it's been heralded as a store, an existing store has had a digital uplift. Now, that's a new term for us all, I'm sure. What does it mean in reality? It means there's pretty much a screen with every piece of merchandising around the store. But surely it begs the question, when is too much too much? And when does all of that, you know, whistles and flutes and gizmos become so overwhelmingly distracting that, yes, it looks amazing, but the primary objective going into the store and making a purchase is somewhat overshadowed, perhaps, by all of that show that's going on around. What do you think about that?
I have to say, as a consumer, I think for me, some of those high-tech stores, that they are technology for the sake of technology, and you go there because you find the technology quite interesting and you quite like experiencing that when you're in store. That doesn't work for every brand. It certainly doesn't work for Fortnum & Mason, where people come into the store because they are looking to engage with tradition.
And there's a certain pace to your store, isn't there?
Yeah, which ramps up at Christmas, I would say. But I think really, if I look at why our customers come into the store, they come in first time because they've seen the storefront. When they come back, it's because they've really enjoyed the service and the experience. And actually, one of the ways that I think we often don't land technology very well is by not really focusing on the people who are going to be using it at front of house. And if you're going to implement a technology, if you're going to implement some kind of new POS system or some kind of personalization using iPads or interaction with the colleague and the technology, you really need to put the time into training the colleagues how to make the most of that and what you're expecting the customer journey to be. And I think if we focus a little bit more on how the technology is used by our teams and less on just what the technology is, then it will land better for the customer.
And have you, in your role, had any notable fails or areas where the customers had a bit of backlash to something you've tried to do?
Yeah, so I think back to when we introduced our new app for personalization. So those who have been to Fortnum might have seen that you can personalize your champagne bottles. So you can get something like Happy Birthday, Dad, written on it. So one of the things we really wanted to do was to offer customers more choice of personalization, so more fonts, more label designs, the ability to visualize before they actually got it printed what it was going to look like so that they could revise it. We developed an app in-house that could do that, and we could display it to the customer on the iPad before we actually implemented it in front of them on the bottle. It was the first time a lot of our colleagues had used an iPad, actually. Some of our old staff. So I think actually spending the time to kind of train that, what you did see was, you know, some of the old staff didn't use the iPad to start with. They went with the old system, they would do it online, and the customer wasn't actually receiving the benefit of that work that we'd put in.
So the confidence in the colleagues wasn't there to deliver the service.
Yeah, and I think there's no substitute to actually, you know, boots on the ground and getting down and showing people on the front of house how they're going to use that technology. I don't think kind of online learning cuts it. I think you have to sit there and do it with them and do it together.
And Tom, when for you is too much too much?
One of the things we've been talking about, and I've seen it kind of talked about the last 5-10 years in terms of how you use digital signage and how can you personalize that experience, you know, by recognizing the person in front of it, whether it's because of their gender or it's actually the person, I kind of think you end up doing things that are a bit creepy, but also you end up distracting yourself from just using the technology to create brilliant creative that works for most people. And I think actually there's kind of been a lot of distraction of how do I link up and personalize the digital signage in store, as well as how we're seeing it on display on the website and things like that. And I think for me, the art of using digital technology in store is about adding to the theater, adding to that kind of in-store customer experience, not worrying so much about responding to the person exactly in front of it.
Now, I think both of you also have footprints in other markets around the world. Are there challenges, particular challenges there to digitizing on-screen content? How do you navigate that horizon?
There's no one size fits all, is the truth. And there's no substitute for people who understand that market as a consumer being able to advise you on what's appropriate. And I think what we're really trying to do as a business is build up that kind of suite of solutions so that as markets change and as we enter new markets and as we learn about the markets we're already in, we can flex with ease rather than being tied to a single model.
I think the interesting thing in kind of the Middle East and also parts of Asia is they're much more brand-led than the UK. You know, a lot of our, whether it's in department stores or in grocery, the UK population will often go and buy your own range. You know, whereas in UAE, you find that over 90% of products in stores will be branded. And so then it's, you know, a lot of it's the trust in the overall brand and how you build your brand perception over there, you know, as part of that.
And the other thing that I would add is that it can be fantastic to leverage those international customers when they come to visit you in the UK. And that's really where some of the richness of information that you can capture in a physical environment, you know, what customers are looking at, what kind of products they are interested in when they see the full range that we stock in store, what would they be interested in taking back to their market? Like, what's the differences in engagement? You can do a direct comparison there. It's really helpful.
And do customers in different parts of the world respond to almost real-time offers differently? I imagine that, you know, some markets are very responsive in terms of deal of the day or this week's specials.
Yeah, I think so. I think in the UK, we don't typically have the kind of weekly flyer where you sit and you look through all the different flyers from the retailers. Whereas if you go to North America, or even as close as Ireland, people will sit there and look through their flyers, which used to be paper, is now often digital.
Certainly Australia's a huge market for that.
Exactly. And actually, UK is almost an anomaly where we don't really do that, and we kind of don't like that kind of way of browsing. Whereas in other markets, it's very much around how do you digitize that kind of old, you know, person flicking through the kind of coupon booklets and stuff like that into, you know, not just a kind of a turnable kind of, you know, digital tablet reader, but actually make it much more immersive in how people are, you know, they're looking at their set of offers, they can load it to their loyalty card and make that a really seamless experience. I think the challenge of digitizing loyalty, and I think at Waitrose we felt it, where how do you make sure it's still really seamless? Because actually having a bit of paper, quick swipe at the tills, it's quite easy actually, but it's expensive doing all the print. So what you have to do in the digital experience is making sure it's still really seamless, and ideally the customer only has to swipe once.
As a Waitrose shopper, I have experienced the pain of the customer in front of me who is trying to upload their voucher wallet that isn't connected to Wi-Fi, that doesn't quite then know
what
to
exactly.
And the levels of frustration and anxiety building in the line behind.
Yeah, and did we go too soon? You know, maybe, you know, probably did, you know, we to the Wi-Fi point, how do we make sure we now have good Wi-Fi in all our stores and it's easy to log in? And then, you know, the second point, you know, Sophie was mentioning earlier, but who are the biggest advocates you'll have around loyalty? It will be your store partners and your store colleagues. They will be the ones getting excited in front of customers. Make sure you swipe your card. Did you know you've got an offer over there? Your partners in store are the most important people to get become your advocates.
Can I just say, I'm so disappointed that you've now digitized the Waitrose loyalty card to your coffee machine. So I can only now take one serve per day, whereas before I would have happily wandered in two or three times a day and had another cup.
Yeah, that's right. We've had to kind of work hard on our kind of coffee and our newspapers. Like the British population, the people that are, you know, using it, they absolutely love the free coffee and newspapers. But I guess the challenge for us is how do we get it cost neutral? We bought in Cafe Nero to change some of the dynamics of it. We're getting there and we're trying to get the right thing for each of the customer groups. I think the key thing for us is who are the customers that want three or four coffees a day?
versus the customers that don't care about having a coffee.
I do actually spend money as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's right. So, and I think it's knowing that, yeah, building up that knowledge about each individual customer to say what's the right thing for that customer. Actually, it's a free coffee. Whereas another customer, it's actually just more important to get some money off for their food.
And I think what you're talking about there is really that deep dive about who is the customer.
Exactly.
And why are they shopping with us? And are there any particular benefits, you think, Tom, to really kind of almost trying to follow and get real-time customer engagement?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, the first thing is to build up your kind of, I would call it a customer DNA. So everything you know about a customer, how can you get it in one place? So yeah, what you're doing in real time, but what did you do last week? How long have you been shopping with me? Did you have a bad experience at some point? So I think it's not only to respond to what you're doing in real time, but to know everything I know about you and how you've interacted with me as a brand. Because I think if you focus just on real time, you're just going to respond to the fact that you're now searching, you'll do something in real time. But actually, as a customer, you want to know that I've been loyal for the last 2 years, and if I have a bad experience, you should do something about it. So we're working on both, where we try and ensure we have a really good customer DNA table that can then be used by all the channels, whilst also, to the point earlier, of in some categories, you have to respond really well in real time to what someone's looking for right now. Mm. So you have to try and find that blend of looking longitudinally at a customer over the long term, as well as what are you doing right now, and try and find the blend of those two things.
And when we think about digital screens in store, Sophie, whether that's used as part of a retail environment solution or whether it's about a piece of tactical marketing, are there any pointers that you would suggest around the creation of content? Because clearly, unlike TV ads where you're literally, 3 meters away from it, literally eyeball to eyeball, there's many more distractions in a store. So what works best in your experience around getting the content creation right?
So I think it's the obvious things, really. It's think really hard about what you want to put on that screen and what you want the customer to take from it before you start creating content. And I think that there's quite a clear distinction for me between signage that's there to inform. In our food and drink studio, we have what's going on in that studio. We have scannable QR codes so that you can book tickets for it. It's got a nice schedule of events. It looks very much like a printed sign would potentially. It can be more flexible. It can have more content on it. We can update it and improve it. That's very different from where we're using digital screens almost as artwork and using that to provide the kind of product or supplier information to bring some of that story behind the product to life in a way that is more engaging than a simple print poster would be. Actually, the imagery can be really stunning, and it can be updated and it can be novel. So yeah, it's knowing what you want to get from that sign before you implement it.
And I guess being very clear about both the scope and limitations of that particular use of the media in that situation.
Yeah, and I think it's a beautiful sunny day in London today. It's still late in the morning. How do you start to think about the day part, the weather? Retail is so responsive to weather because it's responsive to people's mood, And so how do you start to use and think about what's going on for the customer? So we've done a lot of work on in the morning talking about our lunchtime deals, and when we've done a lot of work on our new deals through to the evening, then changing the content. And it's making sure you don't just treat it as a billboard, but you treat it as actually this is much more flexible in, day part. My team laugh at me for using the terminology of day part, but what part time of day is it that you're considering? But also then draw people in through the content and the creative in a different way to what you can in print.
For me, one of my creepiest digital experiences was actually in Burberry, and I'll kind of call it out for what it was. They were an early adopter of RFID and put that extensively into Regent Street. I found it very, very odd walking around a department where the screens would change to reflect what I was wearing and have I thought about buying the next thing to go with it. It felt very intrusive.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I feel about trying to respond to the customer. I feel like I think there's other things you can do that are probably more impactful at this time. I think if a customer wants to identify, actually think about in Waitrose, we use still predominantly cardboard around the store to do our signage. And we are always thinking about how do we transition to be more digital. But what you have to think in a grocery store is where people have long dwell times. So for us in Waitrose, where we massively overtrade is like fine wines. And actually it's an area where you do dwell because you want to find more content about the product. So there are parts of the customer journey where people have longer dwell times because they're researching, they're considering, they're thinking, and how can you build digital journeys into that versus I'm walking down the cereal aisle, I just want to pick up the 3 or 4 cereals that I buy for my family every week. And there isn't that time to capture kind of someone's imagination, and therefore printed cardboard is still just a much more efficient way to get get things in store. Mm. So I think really thinking about what parts of the, you know, the store and the customer journey are the best places to digitize first.
Mm. And I guess one of the things that's changing as well now is clearly there's a lot more automation involved in the content production and also content updating. And AI is also stepping in now to do some of that work too. Have either of you dipped your toe into those spaces yet where you're almost physically letting go of the reins and letting the technology do some of the heavy lifting?
So I think it's massively important that we build a workforce in the future that knows how to experiment with and utilize these tools. And I think any business that doesn't enable that kind of playing now is going to find itself much slower to innovate than those that do. I would say it's not in production yet. For us, it's something we play with internally. It can get you 50 to 80% of the way there, and then really free up your people to do that kind of last piece of work. So I never really see it kind of automating the end-to-end process.
There'll always be some human intervention, even just to check.
Completely, but I think it will allow people to produce a load more content per person and to innovate a lot faster and therefore to end up with a much better output with less time and fewer hours to put into it. So I'm really excited about where it's going.
I'd say on the content side, it's a much earlier stage in the journey. I think there are other problems in retail that are more interesting to solve with AI and machine learning before probably the content. You know, think about how many teams are involved in merchandising and buying and ranging your store, pricing, you know, shelf edge labeling, things like that, where I think there's probably more problems that in front of you that data science can solve than necessarily content.
My final question to both of you, and this is kind of, it's a quick fire response. Am I going to call it overrated or underrated? Interactivity, overrated or underrated?
Underrated.
I think my answer is going to be underrated, but with care. So I think it's fantastic to have people engaging with a brand. And I think that gives them the ability to personalize in the way that suits them as a customer. But I think also people come to a brand because actually we've got a fantastic team of people that curate the right content for them, and they're there to shop the brand because they know that's what they want. So just be careful not to make it too consumer-led.
Yeah.
Okay, next one. So overrated, underrated. Live streaming.
Underrated.
Overrated for sales, underrated for engagement.
Okay, so why underrated, Tom?
So I think for people, when they think about it, they almost think about the old TV channels and QVC and shopping that way, whereas actually these days when you see how much content is generated by brilliant influencers on TikTok, on Instagram, and that kind of ability to create that shoppability of those channels. So I think the key thing is to use the channels now where the customers are, where people are, to create that shoppability through those channels rather than kind of doing it in a more traditional manner.
Okay, final one is then. Overrated or underrated in terms of user-generated content?
Overrated.
I'm torn on this. I think overrated in grocery, underrated in non-grocery.
So I think by kind of being on the market, you have to kind of put your brand out there a bit. And we're careful about the content that we produce ourselves. But I think in some ways you have to let people be a little bit playful with it. I just think that, again, sometimes people want to engage with user-generated content. It's authentic, it's novel, it gives a different take on how people are actually using the product. But equally, sometimes they want to engage with brand-generated content, and that is okay too.
Great. And all of them, of course, come with a certain degree of risk in terms of how they're executed. I'm now going to bring and welcome onto the stage Mike Dowson, Trust. Mike, you've heard what they have to say in terms of the future of digitizing retail. What do you think?
To be quite honest, it's been fantastic. Just half an hour, 40 minutes listening to very similar views coming from very different brands in some respects. And it's really interesting because there's a lot of gems in what you've been talking about, the things that you are wrestling with on a daily basis. And as consultants and as facilitators of technology, they're the conversations that we want to have the deep dive and the special time aside to discuss, because there's a lot of things on both sides of the equation as a supplier and as a consumer of technology that you need proper time for engagement. And I think where we as a supplier have struggled in recent past is where people are coming with very preconceived ideas about how things should happen and how they can happen in their minds or in the way in which they've architected it. And then you get to the practicalities of landing it and it fails because there are some fundamental things that have been missed, they've been overlooked, they've been taken for granted. And the top end, the digital things, all the fluffy things you've been talking about, the engagement piece and all the content creation and AI is beautiful stuff. But actually, there's a foundation that is an absolute prerequisite that you cannot forget. It's a bit like coming here today. I can have the best electric car in the world with the fanciest dashboard and self-drive. But if the car is on a road that's full of potholes and the tarmac's displaced all over the place, and I may not actually get to the end of my journey. And the foundation is key because that's where we're seeing traction and success, is where we get that proper engagement and then let the free spirits have their way because they've got a better chance of landing.
Great. Well, look, it's been a tremendous conversation. Thank you for your attendance. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to the Retail Exchange podcast. Subscribe online at theretailexchange.co.uk and join the debate #RetailExchange. Thanks for listening.